if I had just a typical child, I could, like, of course, just go and be with her and love on her. But because I have Lavender, I couldn't bring her there. So I couldn't go to the funeral. I couldn't be there for those first, like, weeks that she probably really needed somebody in person.
Hello, you're listening to The Rare Life. I'm your host, Madeline Cheney. Today we have an episode that was requested by a listener, Deaths in the Community and How That Affects Us. She ended her message with, "It's probably too hard of a topic to cover, but just wondering if you have an episode about that I could listen to." And let me tell you, if you want an almost guarantee for me to cover a topic, just add in there that it's probably too difficult or heavy of a topic, because I just can't resist those ones. I feel like the ones that are really difficult to talk about or aren't talked about ever are often the most important episodes to cover. Because being in a tight-knit community that unfortunately, tragically, frequently lose their children to rare disease or other illness, this is something that so many of us deal with or will deal with at some point. And as hard as it is to get close to a parent and their child and then see that parent go through the loss of their child, those friendships are so needed and they're so worth it. Not only do they help us know we're not as alone as we feel, but the parents who are a little further along in the journey can also give us really helpful tips and tricks on everything from managing therapies, insurance, wheelchairs, and learning how to use your child's feeding pump. But inevitably, it takes some time before we find and make friends in the community. So until you get connected, Moog Medical, the creator of the Infinity Feeding Pump, has your back. I've met with them many times, and they really, truly care about this community. I know I always say that, but I really do feel it. One illustration of that is their brand new guide for using their feeding pump. In our last meeting, they told me all about it and how they are constantly looking for ways to better support the users of their pump. And this is just one of those ways. It has everything you need to know to use the Infinity Pump, complete with great illustrations and QR codes for video tutorials. Obviously, this kind of thing is most helpful to newer users, but this could also be really helpful to more seasoned users, or for times when you leave your kiddo with a carer that's less familiar with how to use the feeding pump, like maybe grandma or a new home nurse. Apparently, most manufacturers charge for this type of material, but this is totally free and easy to get. You can find a link to the PDF in the show notes. In their words from that meeting, they said, and I quote, "This really matters to us. We're not just a manufacturer." In fact, their feelings and attitudes towards families was just so touching to see that I asked Corey Oram, one of the team that I work with regularly, to record his thoughts so you could hear it for yourself. Thank you, Corey, for being a good sport about this.
Our purpose at Moog is to enhance healthcare and enrich lives. Luckily, every day I live knowing that the pump we create directly impacts someone I care deeply about. My brother-in-law, who is now 16, uses our pump and lives an ambulatory life because of it. Because of my brother-in-law, this isn't a job. I know the impact our devices can have on each individual and the families that need them. To all the families out there, thank you for letting us be a part of your journey. At Moog, we take pride in knowing that the work we do has an impact. We are grateful for the chance to make a difference and be in your lives.
Thank you so much, Moog, for caring so much about this community and for sponsoring this important and difficult topic. We love you. Okay, joining me today for this conversation is Rose Watson. She was kind enough to offer her own thoughts and perspectives as we sifted through the thoughts that this community shared with us on our social media. Rose lives in St. Louis, Missouri, with her husband and two daughters, the younger of which, Lavender, is 7 and has a rare condition called trisomy 18. Rose is a seamstress, and as part of that, makes dolls to reflect their owner, complete with medical devices and everything. She sends her modified dolls all over the world, which I think is just so cool. Little fun fact, before starting The Rare Life, I sewed all the time, so I feel a kindred spirit with Rose. She is a lover of having fresh flowers in her home and of thrift shopping. Again, a kindred spirit. All right, let's dive in. Hi, Rose. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, I'm excited too. as I was going through options of people to kind of co-host this episode with me, I was like, oh, I would love for that to be Rose. So I'm just glad that it worked out. And especially like where you do have like that personal experience of having a friend who lost her child. And so I think like having your thoughts and your perspectives in this too is going to be like really awesome. So thank you.
I think whenever we talked, I was like, I want to make sure it's okay with her too. Like that's one thing with the whole journey. I just always try and be really sensitive to her. So I text her and she was like, I love it. Cause she always wants to talk about Lillian. So she's like, yeah, go for it. I'm excited to hear it.
I love that. And that's like something that we'll definitely get into in the like second half of this episode is like, what do? Like, how do we support them? So I think you'll have so much great insight in that. Cause you sound like you guys have really remained close during this, which I know is not always the case. So that'll be great to like kind of pick your brain and hear what you have to say about that. So I have a lot of quotes to read today. Like that's one of those kind of episodes where we got a lot of thoughts from the community.
Yeah.
First of all, can you start by like sharing a bit of your story with this friend and kind of where it started and where it is now?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I will. So our girls are 4 months apart in age. So at the time, she seemed so much older than Lavender because they both have trisomy 18. So within the community, it's like every day is like a year to a typical child. So I just thought, oh my gosh, like she's already 4 months. And I kind of slowly entered into the trisomy community because I was in denial a little bit at first. Like I thought Lavender would just pass away very early on because that's what our doctors told us. So as you know, it was like days and weeks passed. I'm like, well, maybe I'll talk to some of the trisomy moms and kind of connect with them. And I met Olivia. So they happened to be at our local hospital. And yeah, we just connected through support groups, as I feel like a lot of moms in our community do. We just became good friends since then. And then over time, it was like, sometimes we would both be in the hospital at the same time, a couple of rooms away from each other. And she would come in at night whenever her husband was with Lil's and she would visit. Yeah, I'm forever grateful to Olivia for guiding me throughout those first few months that turned into years.
Yeah. And then your friendship, I don't know, I guess shifted in a way, right? Like with a different dynamic once her daughter passed away.
Man, it has really changed over the years because it's like, we would just be texting all the time, like, oh, what does her stoma look like? You know, things that only medical moms talk about, like, how does this look? Or what is this? And then I remember it was like 2020 where everybody was kind of just doing their own thing. I don't want to say we drifted apart, but everybody was just so focused on like survival in general for their own families. But then Olivia would text me sometimes and just say, I'm thinking about Lil's dying. And I would just be like, what? No, she's fine. And she had that mom intuition. She knew. And yeah, she got sick. Her death is not due to trisomy 18. That's one thing I really wanted to say. She got sick. And once she passed away, I was in such shock. And they live like 5 hours from us. So that's another thing with medical mom friendships. If I had just a typical child, I could like, of course, just go and be with her and love on her. But because I have Lavender, I couldn't bring her there. So I couldn't go to the funeral. I couldn't be there for those first like weeks that she probably really needed somebody in person. Of course, I was texting a bunch and doing all that I could from where I was. Yeah, our friendship since then, though, like so much has changed. Whenever we went to visit her, because we try and go for Lillian's birthday every year. And I remember the first year we went on her birthday after she passed away. And we were both kind of nervous because we hadn't seen each other in a while. And then once we got there, of course, she just like scooped Lavender up and just was loving on her. Mm-hmm. And it was really special to see like Olivia with Lavender. But to have the presence of Lillian still there, but just not physically there. It's really difficult.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And that reminded me of this one mom who was pregnant with a little boy with the same condition as my son. And a lot of times they'll pass away before they're born. And so that was the case for her son. He passed away in utero. And it was interesting because we got connected because of the podcast. And so she was messaging me, and she messages me like pretty frequently of like, hey, how's Kimball? Send me pictures. I love, and anytime I like put him on my stories, she would comment and like, oh, he's just so cute. I love seeing him. I pray for him all the time. I think about him all the time. And it's just so interesting because I think like, I was shocked by that because I was like, if I were you, I swear I would avoid Kimball and any kind of reminder of like what her son could have been, or like, it feels very sensitive. I feel like different people need different things. So it may not be the case for everyone, but it's interesting where it's like, I think a lot of us assume like, you know, if your child passed away, you don't want any reminders. You don't want to see like my child who might make you think of them, and it's just too painful. But I think for some people, like your friend, like it's important to remember that like different people are going to need different things. We shouldn't just assume that they want distance from our kids.
Yeah. And she said to me, it's fine for me to see typical children. She's like, it's actually hard for me to see children within our community. But that is a really unique thing within the community. There are parents that are on total opposite spectrums. There are some moms that I was really close with. And then once their child passed away, it's like, they're gone. Like you said, I think I would be that way too. I feel like it would be too hard.
Yeah. I just want to read a quote too from someone. We got a lot of messages like this. And so I just want to read it because it kind of like sums up the feeling, I think, for a lot of people who are like, I don't know how close I should stay to these people. How do they even feel? She says, a friend I've never met in person but connected to so deeply with because our daughters were born a few days apart. She lost her daughter recently, and I don't know how to navigate our virtual friendship anymore. It makes me feel guilty for sharing positive things that are happening in my life with my daughter, and I wonder if she wishes she could unfollow me. And so I think there's just like a lot of like uncertainty. Like, how do I even interact with parents after they've lost their child? Because that's just so obviously so sensitive, and it's such like a, it's just so hard, right? So like, how do you even relate with them? And I was thinking about it as I was like reading through these, and I feel like I picture it like as like a Venn diagram. So if you picture like the circles and they intersect in the middle, and like one circle would be like the medically complex or like disability community, or even could be like the trisomy 18, right? It could be like your child specific diagnosis if you see it that way too. And then the other circle would be like the loss community. And I feel like these parents that they spent so much time, like their whole, a lot of people's identities are very wrapped up in like being like, I'm a medical mom, I'm a disability mom or dad. And so they hang out in that circle so intensely and identify in that circle so intensely. There's so much community there for them and like these friendships that we have. And then like once your child passes away, then suddenly you're in that like that intersection between the loss community and the rare disease community. And I think that that is a really difficult transition from what I've read from like parents who shared what it's like once their child has passed away. And I think it's difficult for people who are still in the other circle, right, to be like, how do I even relate with them now? Because we're not really in the same community anymore. And so I felt like that was like a helpful visual of like that whole thing. And actually, I want to read something really quick too. Like once I read this message, I was like, oh, I can totally picture like this visual of it. She said, you basically get kicked out of the community. As soon as Noah died, I felt like I no longer was relevant. And quite honestly, very few people wanted to talk to me because I was a reminder that their child would die one day too. I felt really alone all of a sudden. I don't think it was purposeful or malicious. It's just a separation. The thing that connected me to these people is now gone. I also separated myself a little. It was also strange because I suddenly became a resource on death. Parents would message me and ask me tons of end-of-life questions about funerals, etc. I had had such a big support group before, and all of a sudden it was just gone. So I started my own support group, and I feel like I can offer support for those parents that no one else can. And so I just feel like she summed that up so well of like, I was so engrossed in this community, and suddenly there was like this huge chasm. Like, I just didn't belong anymore. That's so painful.
I feel that same way about Olivia too. I mean, she's okay with me talking about the things that she told me. We talked about it before this, but she really said the same thing. She said, sometimes I'll say, have you talked to so-and-so? And she's like, no one reaches out to me, Rose. And I'm like, what? She's like, no. And like, she named off like, you know, I was surprised so-and-so didn't say anything after Lil's died, or just what that person said, you're in it and then you're not. And for me, I'm like, I'm going to be in that position one day. And so I try to treat her the way that I would want to. I mean, because Lil's was a huge part of my life too. So I bring her up every day. If I'm out at the store, I'll send her a picture and I'll say, oh my gosh, this is so Lil's. We talk about her all the time. So, and I feel like sometimes people just, they don't know what to say, but anything is better than nothing. Because I lost my dad about 10 years ago. And I think learning things from that when he passed away, then it really taught me like, oh my gosh, so many things that I was offended by or that people didn't do or that they did do. And I've learned from that.
Yeah. And I love how you said that. Like a lot of times people don't say anything because they're not really sure and maybe assume things like, oh, I assume that's because she doesn't want to be involved anymore. I assume that this is just too painful for her for me to talk about like myself or my child. And I think there certainly are. I mean, there definitely are people who are like, yeah, I don't want anything to do with that community, at least for now. In fact, this person said, being involved in the community is very hard for me right now. I no longer feel like I belong. That might be transient, but only time will tell. So like, there definitely are people like that. But I feel like in all of this, like a very common response I got when I was like, how do you want to be supported after your child passes away? And like for people who have experienced that, and they love it when people talk about their child. Like they really do. Like, I think like you think about your own child, you're like, you're not just going to stop thinking about them, right? Like these people are thinking about them all the time. And so to hear someone else like bring them up, I think is very meaningful. And again, I love that like there's no expectation for response to, like they don't even have to say anything in return, but just for them to know that you're thinking of them, I think it means a lot. This one mom said, I want the community to not forget my daughter, to bring her up and keep her name alive. I worry about her being forgotten with time. She had only just turned one when she passed away. And then another one, I've appreciated the friends who tell me they're thinking about my child and who sent thoughtful tokens after she passed and who check in on how I'm doing. So I think just like them knowing that we still think about them and that we care about them means a lot. And even if like, I think there are like situations too where like we definitely need to consider our own mental health, and we'll get into that in a little bit of like how it affects us emotionally when we learn about a friend that has a child that passes away. Because there's a lot there. It's a very loaded thing. So I do think that it's important to like analyze and put boundaries in place in case it's too difficult for you to stay in close contact. And it could be like a message every so often, like, I'm thinking of you. But if you do need to kind of like create some space because you can't handle being super involved because it just is too triggering for you as a person who still has a child who's living, I think that is also valid, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. It's a really hard balance. I feel like especially the trisomy community, we have deaths so often. And I feel like I had such a close group of friends when Lavender was first born, especially that first year, that I just leaned on them for everything when she was in the hospital. And honestly, at this point, there's probably only a couple of them that are still living. So I don't know if I've just got so used to losing children within the community. You never get used to it, but it's like, I know it's going to happen with Lavender eventually, but maybe I'm delusional to where I try to live like, so, oh my gosh, every second is amazing. And I know that when that day happens, I'm probably going to deal with it so different than Olivia. Like I see the way that she handled it. And I'm such a different person whenever it comes to death and loss. So some things for me too are healing to talk to her and see how she's continuing Lillian's legacy and the beautiful things that she's doing. And she's even said to me, like, you know, when that time comes for that, and like you said, some things might be off limits for other people, but her and I are so close. So she'll say, do you want me to be there? And I'm like, probably not. Like, I'll probably be, you know, in a dark room in the corner, whereas she wanted someone there with her helping dress Lil's and preparing all the things. But I'm such a different person with that. So, but these are things that I feel like moms in our community, we've had to think of their funerals.
Yeah, you're so right that like having, if we go back to the Venn diagram little like analogy, I think like part of it too is like there's a spectrum, right, of parents where it's like, oh, we think that they'll have a normal length life, but they're, you know, medically complex and disabled, all the way down to like your situation where it's like, it's not a matter of if, it's when. And so I think like when you will also be in that, the middle of that Venn diagram, right, where you kind of pass over from that community to the one where like you've lost your child. And I think like having friends that have already gone into that phase I feel like that's really reassuring to be like, I know that like once that does happen for me, or for people who it's like an if that happens to me, I know who I'll go to for that solidarity and for that community. Like there's these parents that have almost graduated in a way onto this other section, and like that they're there and there is a community there of parents who, you know, have medically complex children and then they passed away and they're navigating that. And in fact, I was also thinking like it feels similar to like when like the community that I was able to find of parents after Kimball was born. And I was like, whoa, this is a whole new world. How do I figure this out? There were parents there, right? And so I think in the same way, it's like, then, you know, if your child passes away, there will be parents there too that have also experienced and are further along than you.
Yes. And this is kind of relating to that, but I thought like, I have an older daughter. So I was in this group of moms when she was a baby, you know, and I was close with my sister and all my best friends. But then once I became a trisomy mom, I kind of gradually went over to that side where now all my closest friends are trisomy moms. But then when Lil's passed away, I don't want to say it was a jealousy, but then, you know, Olivia became closer with the lost moms. And I kind of watched this like, oh, now I kind of feel how my friends felt once I moved over to like the trisomy moms, like that's who she relates to more. But like you said, it's like you're going just to a different group.
Yeah, totally. I think like maybe people be like, yeah, but it's like so tragic and it's so hard. And like, yes, I'm not trying to like underemphasize like how hard all that is, but I do think that it can be like helpful to think of it that way. I wanted to read another message too from another mom who's lost her son. She said, the community is all I have. So she's referring to like the disability community. It's all I have. So I crave the connection. But it's hard when the talk is all about kids and what they're going through. It's almost like I don't really belong anymore and have nothing to offer. It's a very strange feeling because I want to be included. But I'd be lying if I didn't say I feel like an outsider at times and wish Ozzy were still here. Mm. That's just so hard. And I think like with time, you do kind of create and find that community that does understand where you're at, right? And where like you were saying, like with your friend where she has found other like lost moms who are in that middle part. Because I feel like there's also like a big difference between parents who have lost a child by like a car accident or, you know, like things like that, right? Where there was no like disability or medical complexity involved. And so to find your people that understand both sides of that, I think is going to be very important.
Yeah. And she even said something recently too, and it really hit me. She said, you know, even being in the community and with Lillian being medically complex and having trisomy 18, I never expected her to pass away. I wasn't waiting for it. I thought that I would be old and gray and taking care of her and, you know, doing her daily cares and her feedings. So it's still just as much of a shock.
Yeah, it's so true. I like you're so engrossed in that care and like that identity. So I think like when it comes to like navigating like the boundaries or like the new dynamics where there were so many messages about people being like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I feel like the best rule of thumb for any situation like this really is just to be honest and like talk to them about it. And I think like, I don't know, even just saying like, what are you comfortable with? Like, do you want me to avoid talking about my child? Is it too painful to keep talking at all? Like, because I think like you can also continue relationships where you're almost avoiding talking about children and you're just talking about like, I don't know, other interests and things like that. And asking them and finding out like how they feel and what they can handle, as well as again, taking in consideration like how much you can handle being involved in their life. Just the honesty is really important. And like you say, like, don't just say nothing, right? like say something.
Right. And I think there's different friendships throughout the community. There are some moms that I wasn't as close with, but I'll still reach out to them. But with somebody that you're really close with, follow their lead. Like if mm-hmm. Olivia is talking about Lillian, of course that shows me that she wants to talk about her. But I think we're also really similar in our religious beliefs. I don't know if that makes a difference too when somebody loses somebody. So we talk about heaven and we talk about all the things that we believe for our girls. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. But so her birthday is August 3rd. So every month on the 3rd, I always will do like a little act of kindness. So I have like little cards that say her name and say stuff about her. And I'll go to like Starbucks and I'll buy something and I'll just say, you know, give this card to them and tell them about Lil's. Or me and Lavender will go to Target and I'll put like a Target gift card in front of a little toy that I think that Lillian would have liked. and just, I try to include her in everything.
I love that. That is so supportive. We've talked about like just keeping their memory alive, I think is so important to parents. Like,
yeah.
And I think like in a lot of ways, we're so equipped to support, like of all the people in the world that like, if you're like, okay, well, I haven't like actually lost a child, but of all the people who haven't lost children, we really are so equipped to help people through this because like mm-hmm. of all people, we can imagine. We do imagine. We think about it, right? Like I think a lot of friends are like, I can't imagine. You know, it's just so far removed from their reality. But for us, it's like something that's really close to our hearts and something that we fear and think about a lot, which, you know, makes it more difficult, I think, for us to support, but at the same time makes us more equipped. It's an interesting dynamic, but...
Yeah, we don't want to imagine it. I feel like a lot of us have had to plan it.
Yeah.
We have to. And she has said to me, you know, there's a lot of things that you almost want to get in order before you're in that really awful state of grief. So there are things that I have thought like, oh gosh, I need to sit down with my husband and say like, well, what would you want to do in, you know, this instance, or things that she has already had to do. And she's just now almost 3 years later, she can talk about it and kind of guide me.
Yeah, totally. So there's value going both ways for that. And like you mentioned too, like the type of friendship you had before the child passed away, I think determines a lot of this, right? So like if you're like super close, so like it'd be more of an involved thing. If you're like, oh, we were like internet friends and we commented on each other's stuff. Like I think like you can scale it to however it feels comfortable or like natural to like match what type of friendship you had before.
Yeah.
So let's hop into the kind of part two about kind of how it affects us. I know that sounds like, I think there's like some amount of like guilt in talking about this part where it's like, oh, like someone else's child passed away. How dare I talk about how hard it is for me? But it is really hard, right? And so like, I think it's important to talk about. Like one person, she had a friend whose child passed away. She said, it's been so much harder for me than I anticipated it being. Lots of emotions coming up. So we're going to kind of like go through the main reactions that people have when they find out that someone has lost their child that they're close to. And so this first one is grief and sadness for that parent. So this mom said, there have been a few losses in my circle of online friends this year, and each one brings about a grief that I never knew would exist. Another one, these deaths gut me for days. Another one, it hits hard. It breaks my heart for our friends. It's like waves of crushing sorrow hitting you. It's the loss of more of your innocence since the beginning of this journey. Yes. Another one, I'm so grateful for the rare disease community we have because I couldn't make it without it. But oftentimes it seems like our lives are so coded in death, it starts to feel normal. And I hate that. I'm sure that's a coping mechanism to grief. The list of people I've known who have passed away has grown exponentially since having my son. And then my son is one of only 20 people with the same diagnosis. When one of the families lose a child, I feel like I've lost my own child. I look at pictures of her and I see my son. Another one, she was talking about how she created a like super supportive hospital Facebook support group. And she met like the different members of that and chatted with them and stuff. And then she said, there have been 5 losses in the last year, and this has just brought so much pain and complex feelings. After losing my stillborn daughter and the pain of that and the intense grief that follows, I just will feel very depressed knowing how heavy that grief is at first, where you can't even get out of bed or eat. Knowing that my friend is going through that also becomes briefly debilitating to me as well. I'm happy to provide support to these moms I've gotten so close to, but it does get pretty intense at times, and I'm not sure how sustainable it is. Another one, when kids with my daughter's condition passes away, I get this deep down sad feeling, and I can't shake it for days. I usually learn about the deaths in a Facebook group that we have, and it got to the point that my husband gently suggested that we mute the group for a bit. And then the last one, I cry so much for the family and cry for my son too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's so much to say. I feel like I was saying earlier, I honestly, at this point, I can't even count how many children have passed away in the trisomy community. And you become like numb to it once you're just losing them. Because for us though, with Lavender, like there is a lot of guilt too, you know, especially whenever people say like, oh my gosh, you're doing amazing. She's seven. And I'm like, it makes me feel guilty though sometimes, because I don't think it's something that one person did over what another person did. It's just their time. And I am so grateful for every second, but oh my gosh, I feel a lot of guilt. When our children are born, children trisomy 18, we're almost like waiting for them to pass away. So for us, it's like every day is so exciting. It's not really a matter of if, but when. Yeah. So yeah, all the children that we've lost, I mean, last year alone, it would be like 1 week one week another, over things as simple as a cold. And it's never anything you're expecting. There are some that are 16 and 17, and then they passed away from a cold, and you're like, wow. And on those days, sometimes I have to cancel everything. Sometimes I have to cancel therapy. I want to pick my older daughter up from school. I don't want to leave the house. It really, really hits me. And my husband is not on social media, so he doesn't have to see all the things. So he just sees all the wonderful things that Lavender is in person. And then when I'm really grieving these deaths, it's hard for him to understand, because I'm like, I felt like they were my family because I've watched them grow up online.
Yeah. And especially like this community is so tight knit too, because like the feeling of like no one else gets it, right? Like the best friends I had before and my family members, my mom, my dad, like no one understands what this is like, but these people do. And so I do think that like they do in a way become like as close as like, not like your new family, like, you know, obviously no one can replace them, but they do feel family like.
Oh yeah. Sometimes I feel like an alien around my like old friends and family, because I'll be talking about things and they're like just looking at me like, oh, okay. Like I'm talking about medical things. I don't want to sound too like above them, so I try and say words that aren't too medical. I like try to say it in a different way. So around like Olivia, we feel like doctors, so all the things we talk about.
Yeah. That's amazing. But yeah, I think like the relationship that we have, like, and even if it's not like the same type of closeness that you and Olivia have, like even just like people in the community, like even like people you follow and you read their posts or things like that, and you message occasionally, like I think there is just like this tight knitness and the feeling like that one mom was saying, like, I see these kids as almost like my child. Like they feel so similar to my child. And I think that's very real too. I think you mentioned that too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I like look forward to seeing their posts as if they're my little nieces and nephews, because they're like going to school and they're getting on the bus, or, you know, maybe they got their trach taken out, or they started eating my mouth, all these amazing things. And then they pass away. And sometimes I'll see a post and it's too much. And I just think I can't even comment right now. I don't know what words to say. I can't gather my own thoughts. So I'll just get off of social media and sit with it for a while. And then I go back and I usually will message them before I comment, because in that moment, you're like, how do I even say the right words? How is a comment gonna summarize everything that I want to say to them?
Yeah. One thing that I've found helpful is for me, I don't know if it comes off bad or good or what, because I haven't talked to the people. I'm like, how did that feel when I said that? But like when things like that happen, you're like, I literally have no words for this. I just say that. I just like in my message, like I have no words, but like I'm thinking about you constantly. And I feel like the honesty there, like people can appreciate that. Like, what do you say about something like this? And so I think like just being really honest with them and authentic and like saying something rather than nothing. I like that you take time for yourself first, because it's like, yes, we want to be there for other people, but like, you got to process this, right? Like, I mean, these things are so hard hitting. And so I think taking time to like, let it sink in and process that loss and what it means for you, then you're able to kind of like, what can I say to this parent?
Yeah, I almost think it's better than to just hurry up and comment like, so sorry for your loss, love you. And you're not really actually taking in like, oh my gosh, their child who I have watched growing up, you know, and I've seen everything that they fought for just passed away, like their world. I have imagined them sitting there and like how heartbroken they are, and I can feel it. And I just have to gather my thoughts and not my words before I just comment something without actually putting love into it.
Yes. And I love how you said that too, like where you're like, you're feeling it too. Like you're feeling, like when you picture what they're feeling, you're feeling it too. I think that's what like a lot of these parents are saying. It's like, you're taking on part of the grief that they're handling. Because again, like, we imagine it and can imagine this so much more vividly than anyone else can, right? Like, because we've been there emotionally, like, we've thought about it, we've planned it, we've wondered and feared. And so I think, like, we can really empathize. And with something like this, like, that's a really hard thing to be empathizing with.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And there are moments, I think, for a lot of us that we have almost been there. I watched Lavender almost die many times. I don't even like the words die, but I've watched it multiple times in the hospital. And then, you know, years later, I post these like side by side of like, look how amazing she's doing now. But then I feel such guilt, because then I'm like, again, it's not something that another parent did versus what I did. That's just the way it has happened. So I really have scaled back on certain things that I used to post about, or even the approach that I used to take. And I feel bad sometimes doing these like victory, like, oh, she's this age now, which my sister has even said to me, like, you need to still be celebrating Lavender though. I know that you love all these children that have passed away, but Lavender is still here. And I don't want you to regret anything. She's amazing. And you still need to be celebrating and doing all the things that you do for her.
Yeah, I really like that. Because I think that's like a common theme too, is like, oh my gosh, how do I post about this when they've lost their child, right? And I think, like, again, like, a lot of it is guilt. Like, the survivor's guilt is a very real thing. But I love how your sister said that. And I think, like, at the end of the day too, there's only so much you can do. Like, I think it's not really our job to protect other people in the community. I know that sounds harsh, but I think, like, we've got to trust each other to protect themselves too, and to draw their own boundaries. And so, like, if there's someone who, you know, you're close to and they are in that community and they lost their child, and so seeing pictures of Lavender and like seeing you guys being happy and stuff like that is just too hard for them, or seeing you complain, right? I think that's another thing that you're like, that's maybe even harder. Like, how could I ever complain if they're like, would do anything to have their child back? But I think, like, if those things are too upsetting to them, like, I think unfollowing someone is a totally reasonable thing to do to support your own mental health, right? Like, I think that they have the power to do that. They can totally unfollow. And just, I've done that. Like, even like when you think about like the parallels between like having kids that are medically complex or disabled and then like typically non-disabled kids, like, there have been people I've avoided. Like, I'm like, I don't want to see you complaining about sleep training. Like, I don't want to see that, you know?
Oh, that's one of the things that drives me the most crazy. Whenever I see people being like, my child isn't sleeping. And I'm like, how dare you? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like so annoying. Because I think, like, we can unfollow them. And then if we're complaining or like celebrating about things with our living children, like people who've had children that passed away, they can unfollow us and we will not judge them one bit, right? Like, we would totally understand. That's my thought about that. Because your sister's right. I think we do need to be able to talk about stuff.
Yeah. And that's been a hard balance that I've been trying to work on in the past like 3 years. And like I said, for that, really that first year after Will's passed away, I'm like, I'm not bringing up Lavender. And then it would be like her birthday or something special. And Olivia wouldn't say anything. And I remember being like, oh, my feelings are hurt. But then I really had to sit in it and go, oh, wait, let me think of it from the other way. If this was Lavender, I don't think I'd be able to do it either. I think that would like really hurt me. But again, I still have to celebrate her birthday. I still have to do all the things for Lavender while I still have her. And our friendship has changed over time. But if anything, we're closer now than ever, because then once we visited, it was like something healed in her. And now we talk about the girls together every day.
That's amazing. Yeah, you guys like figured it out, right? Like there was like this really weird
time
and then you got, and you know, the communication, like I swear that's the key, right? It's like talking about it.
Where those memes where people are like, you send your friend a voice message and it's like 30 minutes of just rambling. That's us all day long. And sometimes it's one of us just crying and sometimes it's laughing and it's all over the place. And that's just how friendship is.
Yeah, I really like that. And she totally could have been like, you know what, Rose, I don't want to talk to you for like several months. I just need a break. Like, you know what I mean? And like, I feel like again, sometimes the communication can be something that's sort of difficult, but I think like just having it there and us being understanding and empathetic, that's key.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move into the section. Cause I feel like this is like when we're talking about like how hearing about a friend losing a child and how it affects us, this is probably like the most prominent aspect, and that is feeling amped up anxiety or anticipatory grief over the possible or future impending loss of our own child, right? Because I think that's like exactly where our brains go when we hear about things like this.
Mm-hmm. With how many children that have passed away, like that I was close with in the last couple of years, and I've just had to think about it so much. And I really think I think about it more so than ever, like when Lavender is sick. And then I really just go, oh my gosh, wait, like she could pass away like right now. It's overwhelming. And I definitely need to be in some kind of therapy, but I feel like you're kind of my therapist in some ways.
That's amazing.
But yeah, there's a lot of things that I'm like, I don't know how to deal with that. And I don't know what I'm going to do when that happens. And I feel like everyone just handles it so differently. I see some people in our community who, when their child passes away, because as we know, our kids are a full, more than a full-time job. And I see some of them when their child passes away, like, and they, especially they have other children, like they go on vacation. It's not that they're celebrating that their child passed away. It's that like, they are doing something with their younger children. They're like, they finally have this time where they can just be away. And then I see some people that are like, I can't leave my room, or I can't even leave the house. I feel like that will be me. I feel like I wouldn't be able to get out of bed because, you know, whenever I lost my dad, that's kind of what happened. I just shut everything down. I didn't eat. I just slept, and I would wake up for like a couple minutes, remember what happened, and like feel so much pain and just fall back asleep. And so I just imagine when you're a parent and losing a child, it's even a million times worse than losing my dad, which was so hard in itself.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's like that one quote too that I read. She's like, I know what it's like to lose someone, like you said, and I know that type of depression. And the idea that my friends are going through something like that is just like too much to even handle, like picturing the amount of pain that they're going through.
Yeah, I'm always like, sometimes she'll send me a message where she's crying or she'll call me. But then for the most part, she's just like living life and doing amazing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I am just amazed by you that every day, all the things that you do, it gives me hope that I won't just like die from pain myself whenever that happens.
I can totally see that. I'm going to read a few of these other messages that people said about like how it affects their like anxiety and anticipatory grief too. So one said, it's the worst reality check. It increases my anxiety a ton. Another one, when a friend lost her child, I mentally started preparing my own son's funeral. Another one, if it's a child with the same disability as my child, it's terrifying. She's generally healthy, but it's a gutting reminder that the same thing could happen to my own child at literally any time.
Yeah.
Another one, it's a slap in the face when it's a reality we may face too. It's a gut punch that my worst fear is not irrational. It happens. It's interesting, again, to like think about the spectrum of like, this is coming from like parents in the community where it's like, it could happen. Like I could lose my child. We don't know. And then to the spectrum of like for you where it's like, we know it's going to happen at some point. I think it like it's going to affect people differently depending on that too.
Like with the anxiety, like you said, sometimes if I really just think about it, I go, I'm not going to therapy anymore. I'm not bringing her to therapy anymore. I'm not going to any big events. I don't want her to get sick. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep her in this bubble. We're not going to go to any stores. And, you know, that anxiety can really take over. And then there's other days where I'm like, she's doing amazing. I can take her wherever she wants. And I'm so proud of her. And I want everybody to see her. It's the moments when she gets sick that I just think, I'm canceling everything. I don't care about anybody else's expectations. I just want her to be alive and I want to protect her in any way that I can.
Yes. Yeah, totally. That makes so much sense. It's like that constant like balance of quality of life versus like trying to keep them alive and so tricky. It's like a constant balance act with that. And that reminds me too of this other one where she said, I'm always wondering how, what caused it? Can I do something or learn something to prevent this?
Yes. And oh my gosh, I remember early on, it's the same as like anytime you see somebody post like that somebody passed away and you immediately go, okay, but wait, how, what happened? And you don't want to message them. But I know that Olivia has had those people that were like, well, what happened? And when Lavender was really young, I remember reaching out to a mom who had just lost her daughter from an illness. And I think she had told me that's how, and I said, well, is there anything you would do differently? And she just told me, like, just love on her. She said, let the house go. Let the dishes pile up. Don't worry about anything else and just hold her. And I have thought about that moment so many times whenever, like, Lavender's just sitting next to me and I'm stressed about work or house stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care about anything else. I just care about her and I am going to love on her. And it really has made me enjoy every moment. And I feel like whenever I just had my older daughter, I was not a very patient mother, but having Lavender has really, like, flipped it for me. If we're getting ready to go somewhere and I'm rushing and she throws up, I go, oh, we're not going to go. I'm canceling it. I don't care. Like, it's not that big of a deal to me to where, you know, with Luella, I would have been so upset and frantic and trying to get there. And nowadays I'm just like, no, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that a lot of people said too. They were saying that, like, when they hear these types of things, they usually really start emphasizing things like that more, like, oh, I just feel my child is still here. I am so grateful for that, right? And like this mom said, it makes me feel so silly for the anxiety and struggle I face with my son when things could be so much worse. At least he's alive. And I feel like that one, I was like, okay, I think we all feel that. How could I be so stressed out about therapies, or how could I be so stressed out about the surgery coming up? Like, at least he's alive. It could be worse. And I think, like, if it's like authentic gratitude, that's great. Like, if you are like, wow, I'm just glad he's alive. Like what you were saying, like, I think that that feels very like authentic gratitude and like a healthy gratitude. But I think like this could easily become like self-minimizing. Right. And it's like, just because things could be worse doesn't mean what you're going through isn't also very hard.
Right. Absolutely. And I feel like within our community, people really, they can compare. And for a long time, Lavender was like the worst case scenario. Like, she was always sick. She had airway issues. She needed a trach. She was on a ventilator. She had a feeding tube. And there are some kids that are like in therapy and taking steps and don't need a feeding tube. And so she was the one that was like, well, at least, you know, or like people would say, oh, but you know, look what Lavender's been through. And I would be like, oh my gosh, like, no, I'm so grateful. She's doing amazing. So it wasn't really just that, you know, she was alive, but we were trying to get to the point where we could enjoy life. We could bring her to the zoo and do all the things, because yeah, you want your child to be alive, but you want them to be living it with you and your family.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Okay. So I have like another quote too about like the anxiety over like losing your own child when you hear about this kind of thing. And this is actually from another mom who has a child with trisomy 18. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, wow.
But she said, it's a reminder that time with my daughter is always ticking. It feels like borrowed time.
You know, when your doctor says, you know, it will probably be 24 hours and you go, oh my gosh, so I'm just going to stare at every eyelash. I'm going to look at her little fingers. I'm just going to cuddle her. And then it turns into 48 hours and you're like, okay. And then it just keeps, there is a guilt along with it, but you're also like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like for a while I was so focused on her death. And then one day I was like, no, we're not going to focus on her death. We're going to focus on her life. And we're going to do all the things that we didn't think, or that people said that she wasn't going to be able to do or to experience. And that has been so healing for all of us, my whole family.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Rose. I really appreciate it. I think this episode is really important. Like, it's kind of a unique struggle that we have, because I don't know that other people can truly understand what it's like to be so surrounded by so many children passing away, and how triggering it is for us to think about our own children and then to feel so much grief on behalf of like those other families. Like, it's just really tricky. So I really appreciate all of your wisdom and your insight in talking about this really difficult topic.
Of course. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
You can connect with Rose and me on social media by following the links in the show notes. Back in season 8, we made 3 episodes about the passing of our children. One about anticipatory grief and the fear of losing our children. Another one about end-of-life decisions and advice in that regard. And the third one about life after loss and how to navigate that grief. We linked all 3 of those episodes in the show notes, so check those out if you think they could be helpful to you or someone that you know. A big thank you to Rose and to everyone who sent in their thoughts and feelings about this topic. Every message was read and learned from in preparation for this episode. And a big thank you to Alyssa Newtile for doing so much of the production of these episodes and so much more. You are the best. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, Moog Medical, the creator of the Infinity Pump. As a reminder, you can access their free PDF in the show notes. Join us next week for a story episode with mom Anissa, all about her son with a rare syndrome and the ways it's affected her life and family dynamics. Don't miss it. See you then.